friends. Good morning and welcome to our final hour here of the fastest 4 hours in talk radio. We call it Frankly Speaking Radio, airing planet-wide on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Frank Whelan, and very pleased to have you with us here today. My two guests have been with us for a while. In fact, Steve has been with us for quite a while here, and we appreciate all of his time today. Steve, welcome back to the show. Also, my other guest, Ted Tweetmeyer, is joining us. His website, dataforscience.net. A wonderful website of all kinds of different projects going on that you can get involved in. It's very exciting, and I know that we're pleased to have you both with us here. Steve, why don't you respond first, because I want you to be able to get some sleep here at some point today.
Oh, I'm okay, man. I'm on the caffeine rush here. I'll be all right for the next 6 hours.
Oh, okay. Well, very good.
I might do Derry Brownfield show next. Should I start playing my own bumper music?
If you'd like. But tell us your thoughts of this forthcoming shuttle launch and the future of the space program in general.
Well, obviously there was a reason for grounding the shuttle. That's the hard part, is figuring out why. 2.5 years now we're going on without a shuttle launch over this. At least a dozen times, if not 30 times, I'm aware of the fact that the camera of the ascent has shown that some foam or something's coming off the tank and hit the shuttle before, and there's never been a problem with it before. We didn't see why they couldn't have done another launch. I mean, there's no reason why we couldn't have done the next launch, which was scheduled for, I think, a few months, 6-8 weeks later after the Columbia accident. There was the Atlantis was scheduled to launch. That's all I really remember at this moment. But point is, they're always pushing this safety thing. The Orlando Sentinel here has always got some article, it seems like every month, about shuttle safety, space program safety, whether it's being compromised. I don't know why they push it, but space travel is not exactly a really safe thing. I mean, frankly, I think we do pretty good considering we use this 60s technology Sorry, man, I'm starting to stutter here, aren't I?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
60s technology and you know, all things considered, yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's what the shuttle is. It's basically just, you know, revamp of the Apollo program.
The whole cape is loaded with 60s technology.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting, too, when you think about the technology suppression. I'm aware of friends of mine that have worked at in government black ops programs, and they've talked about anti-gravity vehicles and all that.
We've had them for a long time.
Yeah, I believe so. I think that's what a lot of these UFO sightings that we're told, I think that's what they are.
Absolutely.
Scott, am I answering your question at all here?
Yes, absolutely you are. And, yeah,
I think everything's going to be fine. You know, I think they just like to hype this up. They always do that. That's the only thing I can really say as far as the, you know, shuttle safety compromising articles that always tend to come out from time to time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Ted, your thoughts on that?
Well, I recall that I believe it was 97 or 98 when around the end of January, I think it was the 29th of January, that Golden had a news conference. Was then the administrator of NASA, and he said there'll be no more manned space flights of any kind. And of course, that put the press into a frenzy, and he just walked away from the podium, never answering the reason. The next day, he got up there and said, well, we're going to have manned space flights. And again, never answered why he made either statement.
Right.
I think that I think there's one of two possibilities. One is, I know that they've had time travel technology for a very long time, essentially like a portal. They can pretty much go and do what they want. And they've had remote viewing, which is also a form of passive, non-physical time travel. I think what happened is at some point in the near future that some manned space mission caused something very disastrous. And I'll talk after the break.
Yeah, definitely want to hear this. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. More from our guests and more Frankly Speaking Radio. Us from Florida, also Ted Tweetmeyer, our guest, his website, www.data4science.com. Data4science.net. Welcome back. Ted, you were just giving us some information about, based on the people you know and the things that you've heard and sort of where all this might be heading.
Well, the couple of possibilities, like I say, that one is the reason that Golden made that announcement, you know, is because there's some future event might have been linked to the space program. But, you know, the fact that no explanation was given, I found was pretty darn interesting.
That is interesting.
They play a lot of games with people. They play games with pictures. You know, the Clementine moon mapping mission started out as a civilian mission, and then the military took it over. Excuse me. Just getting over a cold here. The images weren't released for a very, very long time after that. But some word came out of NASA that some of the first pictures coming back were finding structures on the moon that they really didn't want the public to know about. That's why they slapped it into black mode.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Interesting thing that's going on with that. You and I were talking about this the other day, Ted, about, I guess, vertical and horizontal events? Would this be something that we would want to talk about here? Are you familiar with what I'm referring to?
Yes. That's a brief discussion, if I can delve into that.
Absolutely. Well, I think it ties in here because, again, if what you're doing here with your website, dataforscience.net, involves looking at time shifts and pole shifts and things like that, that are happening. We know in the Bible it says that the days would be shortened and all these other things, so there are many reasons to look at this, but some of the technology that we see is obviously extremely outdated, decades and decades and decades old, and what you were just talking about there speculates that perhaps that there's a little bit of foreknowledge in the part of our government officials, and It ties in with, I think, what we're going to be talking about here with this meeting, I guess, this presentation.
Well, there's a lot of social engineering going on, and the social engineering is all aimed at creating a global one-world government. But there are essentially two factions involved in this. There's the Western New World Order type people and the Eastern. And Russia and China basically comprise the Eastern one, and of course we're the Western one. And there's some megalomanias like Barnett, who's a political science on contract with the Pentagon, who's given dissertations on exactly how this will be done. And one such dissertation was aired on C-SPAN from the Pentagon, and the Pentagon audience, which was, I would estimate to be about 1,000 people based on the auditorium size, was a cross-section. Just about every uniform you could think of was in that audience, including a lot of civilian uniforms. Civilian people. And his presentation, a big multimedia, blitzy, wall television-type presentation, basically described the U.S. as the core and how we had to create war around the world. You still there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I lost you because the line changed.
No, they're just eavesdropping.
Yeah, probably. And I was going to say to my guest, after you've been on a show like this, you can expect covert break-ins. So I've had a number of those, and you'll find that your door key doesn't go in your lock the way it used to. Anyway, getting back to this, So we have these events that are orchestrated, and by starting these wars around the world, they can take over these countries and bring them in the core. But the problem that Barnett points out is we don't have a way to really manage the countries after we take them over. I think that just translates to the local population doesn't want you there.
Yeah, it should be common sense to at that point.
Yeah, and Iraq shows what happens when, you know, you're in a frontless war. You know, I mean, Vietnam had fronts, but, you know, this war has no front. The whole country is a front. There's no safe place to go. But anyway, Barnett talked about, just a moment, vertical and horizontal events. He described 9/11 as a vertical event, and off of that can come stock market manipulations and the anthrax letter scare, and other horizontal events can stem from that, help forward the whole plan. But he basically all but came out and said that we did it. I mean, he might as well have said we did it. So the point is they're not hiding this anymore. I mean, when you air this on a network that's visible around the world for all to see, it's clear that, you know, you would think something like this would be a classified event, but no, they aired it because they're telling the world, you know, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
He said, and another direct quote from him, he said, those men and women serving overseas, they're not coming home, not ever. That's his exact words. And, you know, this tells you, this speaks volumes about what's going on. And it tells you things are going to get much worse before they get better. You know, and some word that either next month or July will be when something very big happens, possibly on a nuclear scale.
Yeah, everything that I've seen indicates July myself, but who knows if it can even wait that long. But I think that's what's so intriguing about this is that looking at all these different events that are transpiring and saying, you know what, if there was some way of them sort of having foreknowledge of these events, they might leak stories to kind of give people some insight, whether it be, as we talked about on the show before, an approach of something like Planet X, or whether they know, you know, that a certain disaster might be imminent. They might, you know, do what they can to, you know, presumably do what they can to be good public servants and take care of the public. But we all know the truth of the matter is, of course, exploitation of every single event that occurs, and they're always ready to go into spin mode whenever necessary. We also know that they're always looking out for their own interests first and foremost, and that includes things like building underground shelters. You got Bush saying, well, you know, I think we're going to be back on the moon in you know, this many years, and I think we're going to be on Mars in this many years. I mean, he basically came right out and said the space program needs to change virtually overnight, you know, in the realm of how things move. And it was pretty surprising. I think a lot of people were shocked by Bush's position on the whole NASA thing. Let's get Steve to comment here. Steve, your thoughts on Bush's announcement about the bases on the moon and all that stuff. I mean, were you guys just blown away by that whole thing? Did that just kind of hit you over the head?
We all look at his propaganda. His daddy pulled the same thing in the late 80s with our, you know, space station mission to Mars and all that stuff they started back then, you know.
Oh, okay.
So,
you don't view it as anything legitimate?
Nah, just the hype to get morale up, you know, which, of course, morale is always low, you know.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. It does bear some note, though, because I think my take on it is that these people, you know, the powers that be, the elites, are always looking to take care of themselves, whether it be, like I said, underground bases or, you know, hiring some, you know, company, having a contest to build some sort of, you know, outside, outsourced, basically, of a private corporation, building some sort of airplane that can fly into outer space. It does make one wonder if they're not maybe looking at something along those lines, about saying, hey, you know what, we've got this base, and, you know, if things are going to get bad here in such and such date, then we have, you know, some place to go. Because obviously they're the most important people to preserve.
Yeah, there's a book was written called Alternative 3, which is about, you know, base
yes.
elsewhere. And that book creates a lot of trouble for people, for the publisher, apparently. Mm-hmm. But there anything the military says they're going to do is always translated to something they've already been
doing. That's finished and, you know, finally allowed to be acknowledged, I suppose.
It is, and the TR-3 has no trouble at all making it to Moon or Mars. It's a very fast vehicle. It's an anti-grav vehicle. It's flown over my house, and it rattles your windows because of the gravitational field. And it's big. As big as a football field. It's huge. So, you know, getting around out there isn't a real problem. We've even got a military space station up there, but that's another story. I mean, they're always, you know, the military technology is between 50 and 100 years ahead of everything that the public knows about.
Hey, Ted, what's your thoughts on the Van Allen belt?
Yeah, that's a very intriguing question, the Van Allen belt that surrounds the Earth and that you can't get away from, you know.
Well, that's what the moon debunkers use as one of their, you know, we didn't go to the moon thing, you know.
Well, you know, here's my take on that, okay? I mean, I've seen the equipment they took to the moon. It's interesting.
Hey, Ted.
Yeah.
What's your take on this?
He's answering it. I guess you just couldn't hear him, so.
On what?
on the moon? Answer it after break.
All right. Steve, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Folks, we'll be right back. We'll continue this, take some phone calls as well. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today, Ted Tweetmeyer. His website, www.data4science.net. Stay with us. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I'm your host, Frank Whelan. Glad to have you with us here today. It is Wednesday, and I've got about 35 minutes left with our guest, Ted Tweetmeyer. Ted, welcome back to the show. If you want to go ahead and respond there to Steve's question, then I want to pick your brain on some other things, too. He's wondering about your take on the moon, the Van Allen belt, and the idea that people say we haven't been to the moon. I think evidence indicates we've been a lot of places, but not with the equipment that they would have us believe that we got there. Do you agree with that?
Well, what I think may have happened, right, is we probably did get to the moon, but what I think they had to do was restage and retake some of the photos. Some of the photos definitely don't look real, and the shadows are wrong, and you know, a number of things are wrong with them, indicating a nearby point source of light. The Van Allen belt supposedly has, you know, openings in it that, you know, one could travel through. And that's a whole other story, though. I can't claim to be an expert in everything,
right.
But
mm-hmm.
But the moon's an interesting issue.
Now, yeah.
I have seen and held in my hands a specimen camera that was used for Apollo. It was a backup camera. The camera was actually made by Eastman Kodak, by the way. And, you know, it was a camera, you might remember, that was on the end of a long handle, and the astronaut could, without bending over, could just set it down over a rock and take a picture of a rock right where it sat. The camera, curiously enough, has nickel-cadmium batteries in it. And they're just ordinary General Electric NiCad batteries that anybody could buy. Now, in a vacuum, you know, in the near-perfect vacuum of space, I'd find it hard to believe these batteries wouldn't leak.
Interesting, yeah.
You know, I was quite surprised because they are open to the surrounding environment. They're not sealed in a pressurized container, what have you. In fact, they're located in a cylindrical pattern around the inside of the specimen chamber. That's where they actually put the batteries, and there's a couple strobe tubes down there, and you know, that's big enough to put over a rock, maybe, you know, 3-4 inches in diameter or something. Take a picture of it. So, but, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions about that whole thing, and, you know,
yeah.
Which was really Kennedy's initiative to get into space and to, you know, by the end of the decade. So, 1969, they just made it.
Yeah, barely.
Barely.
I want to talk a little bit about, before we go to the phones, about some of the harassment that you've gone through. I know that that your information on Challenger and sort of the stuff that was going on with that, the first time you brought that out, not only did you get a bunch of harassment, but also you kind of got, I guess, an interesting reaction from the particular show you were on. And, you know, you go into as much detail as you feel comfortable talking about there.
Well, the Challenger, it wasn't until sometime after it happened I began to see it from a different perspective, because I was in the box for most of my life. And I'll admit that. And one day, after a considerable amount of research, it'll hit you. I mean, it will hit you. When you get out of the box, you'll know it. You'll be hit like a ton of bricks landed on top of you. You'll get the same powerful feeling you get maybe when you learn of the loss of a loved one or what have you, because you realize everything you knew wasn't necessarily true. And now, people in the box have been brainwashed to label people outside of the box conspiracy theorists. The big problem is most of the conspiracy theories are true. There's basis in fact in them. You know, they may not be 100% accurate, you know, but the basic premise is true in many of the theories. And those in the box, they don't want to get out for one of many reasons. One, you know, the comfort zone, the of not wanting to know the truth and to just continue living like sheep in a pasture. You know, you take the cows in a field, you know, and you next time, you know, whoever's listening to the show, when you drive by a farmer's field and you see the cows out there peacefully grazing in the pasture, they don't know what's in store for them.
Right.
They just know they can walk around and eat straw, grass, hay, and stroll in the barn and get relieved of 2.5 gallons of milk and go back out in the field. And
it's a pretty good life if you don't know what it's in store for you. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the same for the goats and, you know, everything. And so then there's the fear factor. You know, people are afraid. Oh, if I know something, oh, I'm going to be at risk. Or, you know, and we have endless shows on television promoting the shadow government, you know, the old black ski mask, black uniform, armed to the teeth. Oh, wait.
All right, we'll come right back, folks, and we'll talk about Ted's revelations, how some people are fearful, and what kind of things have happened to him, and physical attacks on him, attempts on his life. It's an amazing story. We'll be right back with more Frankly Speaking Radio and more from our guest, Ted Tweetmeyer. Stay with us. Midweek edition of Frankly Speaking Radio. I'm your host, Frank Will, and our guest today from the website, www.data4science.net. Dataforscience.net, Ted Tweetmeyer. Ted, thanks for being on the show again. You're a hard man to pin down, and I don't blame you. We were just talking about fear-based response and also about, you know, some of the harassment that you've endured as a result of coming out with your information and some of the things you've been working on. Please go ahead.
Well, you know, there's a lot of truth to that old expression that you get the most flack when you're right over the target. And you do, as you know yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they really turn up the heat to try to intimidate you to shut up. And it comes in a lot of forms. You know, it just, some of it is absolutely laughable. And I found they also use people like me for training operations that came back to me through a third party. I asked them to find out what was going on. So things aren't as tight and hard to find out as people imagine them to be. I mean, there's people that talk. There's people on the inside that, you know, don't like what they're participating in. I was thinking about all those people and they're listening to that Pentagon dissertation by the megalomaniac Barnett. And I thought to myself, you know, were they ordered to be there? You know, they were sitting there with their mouth just open. You know, some of them were just in shock listening to this man talk about promoting war, nonstop war. Now, you know, what's going to be the cost of this? Well, you know, we need to talk about that for a moment. The cost and what depleted uranium is going to do for our next generation of young people is going to be devastating because it's already happening. Thousands and thousands of soldiers are coming back sick and dying. More than 100,000 are sick and have died, most of which have died, from the first Gulf War. And it's from our own weapons that caused it. And that shows you the extremely low regard that the government has for our service people. And we're going to see a forced draft take place. The volunteer army is going to become history. And if you look back in the history of the country, every 40 or 50 years, we go from volunteer to draft to volunteer to draft. And now the pendulum's swinging back toward the draft again. But this time, they're really playing for keeps. You know, they're going to need a huge number of service people to support all these wars, to secure all these countries. And then the result will be there'll be virtually no American soldiers left in America. And you're going to see countries they really hate Americans, like Russians and others. You're going to see them provide the soldiers for our streets. And Bush said back in 2001 that, you know, if he had to, he would put foreign soldiers on American streets. And there's plenty of people in the world that just plain hate us. they're just going to love to push Americans around.
Absolutely. And you and I talked about this, too. I mean, the concentration camps, the civilian inmate labor facilities, these are all on the record. Enemy combatants to be determined by whomever. And I know you've actually toured one. Your eyewitness accounts that you gave us last time you were on the air are just fantastic and fascinating stuff.
I don't believe what I hear, Reed. I go check it out when I can. Then I say, geez, it is true. And, you know, it is true. And there's hundreds of them. There's like 10 to 20 of these camps in every state. The bigger the state, the more camps they have. Texas had something like 15 or 20 at the last count. And, you know, this is where they're going to put Americans. This isn't for prisoners they find overseas. No, the people are capturing in Iraq. They're staying in Iraq.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Americans can't delude themselves and think that these camps are for someone else. No, they're for Americans.
Yeah.
They're for people like you and I, people that love freedom. Oh, what a terrible shame.
Yeah. Well, Ted, I'm very glad that you have come on and spent so much time with us. And I know that you get a lot of harassment whenever you do something like this. And I'm sorry, but I do think that the truth is really important, and I think you do a great job of getting that information out. Tell us again a little bit about the website and how people can get involved and what they can expect with their involvement.
Well, www.dataforscience.net, and we explore things like the Taos Hum, time jumps, full shifts. There's a high-frequency tone people are hearing all over the place, which sometimes is quite loud. It's kind of like the horizontal in your TV. If you put your ear up next to your television, when the volume's turned down, you'll hear this high-frequency sound, and you can hear something like that everywhere. Doesn't even matter if you're deep underground, you can still hear it. There's a number of different things that, you know, and people are confirming. Everything I've explored so far, people have backed up with their own observations from around the world, from many other countries. And these people, you can easily sign up and participate. There's a volunteer sign in, and you'll put you on the newsletter list. And, you know, we have developments. We send it out. We don't believe in stuffing your inbox with endless, useless newsletters. We only send them out when there's something significant to share with everybody. And we do encourage folks to participate, because it's a chance to participate in something that is really science-oriented. It isn't being done for any profit. I'm paying for the hosting of the site and the domain out of my own pocket. And we have a volunteer webmaster, Chris Bake, in Indiana. He does a marvelous job. He puts up with all my endless requests. And Chris is a pretty amazing guy, you know, for a guy who his profession isn't even connected with computers. He's done an excellent job in creating a secure website. We don't share any participants' names. We don't sell them to email lists. That will never happen. The site is secured. When we post data and observations, we don't give specific locations of folks. And we only ask for location information just for map plotting purposes, because we have an automated plotting system, so your observations go up in real time. So,
well, that's excellent stuff, and you have obviously been a great source of information for computer security because of some of the work you've done. You did some of the computers at the NSA and whatnot. So you know about, you know, backdoors, and you know about watching out for this program and that program. And honestly, Ted, people don't realize this probably, but you have been, your guidance has kept me up and functioning quite a bit. So I really appreciate that.
Really?
And yeah. Well, you and I have talked about this, about the way they're getting involved with the intercepting emails and different things like that.
Yeah, you must never, ever be online without a firewall, without a regularly updated virus scanner. I mean, never, ever, because you will be attacked viciously. I upgraded my machine to XP Professional a while back and stupidly allowed the Windows installation disk from Microsoft to check their server for an updated installation. Now, that was a very bad mistake, because immediately after XP was up and running, I immediately put the firewall back in, and downloaded the, you know, McAfee. I happened to use McAfee virus scan. It just happens to be that one. And I ran it and found in just a half an hour of not having a firewall running, I had 14 different viruses and worms got into my computer. Thankfully, none of them did any damage. But, you know, you should never log on for 1 second, because it's... to be online without a firewall is, yeah, is the same as walking into the inner city and the gang-infested areas of a city, you know, in the middle of the night, unarmed and alone, and sooner or later something's going to happen. And it's exactly the same way on the web, because the web is a literal jungle. There's just people out there constantly attempting to attack and get in. I guess it's Elliot Spitzer has introduced an investigation, and he wants to stop the spyware, which I think is great, because spyware does raise havoc with your computer. If your machine is slowing down, starting to run erratically, there's a good chance there's spyware on it. There's even some free spyware scanners that'll get that stuff off. Because marketing people are scanning your machine, your interests, your website you visit,
yeah,
you know, for information. If you have AOL, you'll find a couple folders with your name, your username on them on your computer. If you look in the one folder, if you look in there, you'll find a file with your username, and when you look at that, you'll discover it's a list of all the websites you visited. When you log on AOL and it says updating database, it means updating their database with your information. Mm. They're one of the worst culprits of spyware around is AOL. They're terrible.
And you mentioned there was another thing, too, that they were trying to get people to upgrade to having some chips, and these chips actually were part of the problem, something along those lines?
Well, there's actually what it is there's a new operating system called Longhorn from Microsoft that's going to surpass Windows, and Longhorn's going to require special chips on the motherboard. You know, and that's just absolutely nuts. You know, I think what basically they are just back doors buried in your machine. A friend of mine found 5 back doors in Windows XP, and he took out 3 of them. He could no longer log on. And he called his ISP about it. The guy says, just a minute. And a few seconds later, he told my friend, he said, try it now. And then he was able to log on, but he wouldn't tell him what he did. Yeah, they're sticking their fingers in your machine at every level. I mean, if you're mm-hmm. you're someone engaged in work, you know, professional work or confidential work with customers or what have you, you don't want it to get around, then do it on a computer that's not online. It's almost your safest bet. Or switch the modem off or something. And you know, and keep the file encrypted. Now, that's important to keep information encrypted on your machine in case it's compromised. So consider this, all right? You have files on your computer, and then your computer dies. Now, if you're not someone who fixes your own computer, you take it in for repair. All those files are wide open for anyone to look at.
Did you hear about that gal that's suing, I think it's Circuit City? She had something like that exactly happen to her. She brought in her computer to do something, and then I guess, you know, they said she could trade it in or something. Anyway, so she gets a call a couple months later from some guy who bought her computer, and guess what was still on her hard drive? All of her files. And he had her social security number, her phone number, her name, address, all kinds of stuff, and he called her up and told her about it, and I think it was Circuit City. They said, you know what, we're legally under no obligation to do this for you, to do that, but here it was. Her all of her personal information on the sales floor of the store. Very amazing story, and yet not surprising at all.
Yeah, you have to do an NSA type drive wipe. If you're going to format a drive and leave it in a computer you're going to get rid of, there are programs that will go through and wipe the drive and overwrite it. They'll make it impossible to recover anything.
Oh, that's good.
Because deleting files isn't enough. You can recover deleted data. That's almost child's play.
Yeah.
You have to go in and do a scramble wipe to bury it, you know, and then it's okay. But most people, they don't understand. You know, right. when your computer is online, your computer is basically, if you'll excuse the expression, having intercourse with all the other computers out there. I mean, it basically is. They're commingling back and forth. There's many, many things going on over the web and through the machines that people don't even see happening. Like, when you shut down Windows, why does it take so long to shut down? Because it's making a record of everything you did since the last time you turned the machine on. And the longer the machine's been running, the longer it'll take to shut down. Try that sometime. You'll see it's definitely related. If you turn your computer on and shut it right down, it shuts down pretty quick. If you've been online a day or two or been running, it'll take a long time. This information can find its way back to Microsoft and whoever else wants it. I mean, your machine is it's like a book on a library shelf waiting to be retrieved.
Scary thought.
Yeah, I mean, it is a scary thought. You know, we put too much trust in these things. You know, yeah, firewall is good. It's not perfect. You know, virus scanning's good. It's not perfect. I mean, the virus scan companies are always a step behind the people writing the bugs because, you know, the bug has to be out there long enough for them to be told about it. And by then, it's probably already done a fair amount of damage.
And you'd mentioned to me one time that, you know, it's good to go with not the most well-known antivirus software out there, because the people who are writing the programs, they write for the majority. You know, they want to target as many people as they can, so they go with the most well-known, most popular antivirus software.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the reasons I don't particularly want to use Norton myself, because, I mean, there are bugs written to go in and shut it down. I mean, there's nothing you can't do. I mean, as someone who's written code for microprocessors, which is essentially what's in every computer is a microprocessor, I can tell you that once your software is running, there's absolutely no limit. In fact, some 15 years ago, some of the first bugs came out that would actually physically destroy the computer. And they did this by flipping the head back and forth so fast it would destroy the head. They were sending commands to the hard drive and literally destroying your hard drive. We're not talking about soft destruction where, you know, the data's lost and you just go format it and you're running again. We're talking about literally loss of hardware. But some of the more vicious ones delete the BIOS. And the BIOS is a small program, the one that brings your computer up and loads Windows. And they go in and delete that, and it makes your motherboard junk. Because, you know, once that's wiped, there's nothing your motherboard can do anymore, absolutely nothing. You can't recover it or anything because the chip is soldered right to the board. In the old days, it was plugged into a socket, you know, but not anymore. You know, there's hardly any sockets on the boards anymore. So, you know, one really needs to understand some of these things to be protected, because ignorance can be a dangerous thing.
Absolutely, my friend. We're coming up on a break here, and boy, I'm disappointed we've had to strand all these callers so far. When we come back, we'll try to squeeze in as many as we can. And Ted Tweetmeyer, always a pleasure. Your website, of course, dataforscience.net, and you can give out that, and we'll talk a little bit about your articles and whatnot when we return. Ladies and gentlemen, stay with us for the dwindling moments here of our Wednesday program. We call it Frankly Speaking Radio.
You bathe, right? And those dishes and laundry, you wash.
Good morning, my friends, and welcome back. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. Our guest today is Ted Tweetmeyer. His articles can be found linked up through our website at franklyspeakingradio.com, at least some of them. But you can also do a search for his name and find hundreds of articles he's written over the years on numerous subjects. His website, www.dataforscience.net. That's data, the number four, science.net. Ted Tweetmeyer, welcome back. Let's try to take some calls here, if that's okay with you.
Sure, I apologize for making anybody wait there.
No problem. Let's go to Drew in Arkansas. Drew, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
How long have you been on hold?
An hour and 20 minutes.
I think it's been longer than that, unless you hung up and called back.
No, it's probably been more like 2 hours, ever since Ted clicked on 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault.
Hey, I've enjoyed the entire show. This is just a quick response. I think that you need to keep in touch with Frank and get on this. And Frank, you need to invite Ted back every other week, because there's so many subjects here. I've got 40 questions I wanted to ask, and I didn't even know where to start. But as an electronic engineer, one of the questions I had was information about special relativity. And I don't want any answers right now, Ted, because my biggest question is, you made a comment earlier about Moon, and I've got a question about the Picard crater and the 20-mile-high glass dome that sits outside of that, and the fact that the Russians discovered it in 1965. What do you know of that, or do you?
A friend of mine, Richard Hoagland, he's done an amazing amount of work on analyzing structures on the Moon and Mars. So